sorry.
Do you want to start? Do you want to wait?
He'll be here in 2 seconds.
Okay.
Why don't you grab the audience microphone for Carol to use?
We're going to go into this last planning session of the two-day planning session. I'm going to turn it over to Bobby Wunsch, who's going to take us back to priority setting discussion as well as strategies. And then I know we have at 11:30 at the latest, there are a number of our partners, service providers, educational institutions, partners that may have public comments, and we put aside time for that public comment period as well. So just so that folks are aware of the next hour 45 till the end. So, Bobby?
Okay, so I just wanted to, as we start on this last discussion for today, not the last discussion of strategic planning, just to remind the directors where we're heading. So we're heading to, at our next time together, a draft strategic plan that will identify from our discussions that we've had, from all the data that's been collected, a set of strategic priorities, a set of strategies, major strategies to go with each of those priorities, and a set of draft anticipated outcomes so that you can measure progress along the way over the 3 years of how well the district is accomplishing what you set out to do. So again, we focused our discussion yesterday on talking about the creation of these principles that we mentioned earlier this morning. And then we came up with these four content areas of focus as a start. No decisions were made about these. As we go further into the discussion, the directors may want to narrow the focus. We'll give them a lot more specificity as we go forward. And the fifth content area is what we're going to discuss this morning. We're going to continue the discussion on the district expansion. So as part of that, I just wanted to share with you a little bit of data just to compare the West Valley and the East Valley just in terms of overall demographics. Pretty startling comparison when you look at the West Valley and the East Valley in terms of a percent of people from communities of color. Almost 50% of the West Valley, almost 94% in the East Valley. Percent of limited English speakers, 16% in the West Valley, 45% in the East Valley. And you can see the far right column is Riverside County as a whole. The percent of the population below 200% of the federal poverty level, 37% in the West Valley. That's significant in the West Valley, but almost double that percentage in the East Valley. And then the percent unemployment, 6% in the West and about 14% in the East, and Riverside as a whole, 8%. Don't worry too much about the exact percentages. What we're trying to look at here is the relative differences in the need in the West Valley and the East Valley. And this is from a report done by the UC Davis Center for Regional Change in June of 2013. So obviously the data could have changed. Really just an illustration of the two areas that you're thinking of expanding to. wanted to focus the conversation on this morning with the directors to get some feedback on the issues in the district expansion. Really are, what are the strategic questions? So this goes back to our format from yesterday so that we can be consistent. What are the big questions that we need to answer over the course of the next 3 years as it relates to the expansion? And what are the big decision points out now? 6 months, 18 months, 3 years, or 36 months, which is the period that the strategic plan will cover. So why don't we start with the directors in terms of your thoughts on these questions. And we have really two directions here. One are all of the efforts that we've just been talking about in terms of the ballot and the funding. We also have, if that's successful, what are the issues related to implementing health and wellness programs and services through resources, through health facilities, through information and community engagement, and through public policy. So remember, those are the four components of the vision of the healthcare district. So let's just open this up and we'll have a little bit of a freewheeling discussion in terms of that, in terms of what do you see as the big strategic directions as you begin to think about the expansion to the East Valley?
Well, I think that the first thing we need to address is how we're going to fund it. And that would be the top priority. And based on what I've heard, I think that the answer is complicated. And I think that we need a tax expert to show us what some of those areas might be that we could think of that would be amenable to the county, to our constituents, to our population, and to the directors. So I'm in favor of calling in an expert so we can look at that in detail.
Great, so it seems like that's really a top priority, and many of the directors are shaking their heads, and has to be done relatively quickly in order to be prepared for the ballot initiative and the preparation of the voters, certainly. And Herb, feel free at any point to jump in also in this discussion. So thanks, President Rogers, for kicking that off.
I would just say that staff is already working on that.
Okay. Do you want to give kind of a time frame when that discussion will unfold so the directors have some sense of that? I mean, just overall.
Before June. How's that?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
By June 5th. which I think by June 5th, informed by discussions with the other policymakers that will be a part of their decision making. June 5th.
Okay, good. I know someone commented, it's right around the corner. So I think everybody's aware of the urgency of this conversation. Dr. Zendel.
Well, and just to be complete here, we're not only talking about possible tax revenue, but we're talking about possibly getting funds from other entities, whether it be foundations or people that are currently doing business here in the Coachella Valley that are making money off of residents on the east side of the valley. So that whose services they provide and stuff like that. Do you want to add to that?
So when I look at the expansion, which I'm 100% in favor of, I'm not in favor of decreasing any other services to our community specifically because I think we're already underserved. But I think my personal vote is, you know, and direction would be that the district just agree to fund the expansion and leave it at that. And we have lots of time to figure out different ways for us to get that funding and being creative, but to me, that really would really solve several issues, and that we could just decide, yes, we're going to fund it. The lease payments that currently come, or the lease payments that were prepaid for tenant, but really apply this year's lease payment applies to this year. A percentage of that could be allocated right now to East Valley because a percentage of the profits for that hospital come from the East Valley, and so the services that we're providing from that hospital that people are already paying for some of that funding that goes into the lease, which, you know, would be a one way we could do it. We don't even have to touch our property taxes. But I think there's a lot of ways the district could already fund the expansion.
I'm going to get a mic.
I can share with you.
While you do that, while you get that, let's talk about that prepayment of the lease that you just mentioned. The prepayment of the lease went, it was $110 million. $90 million of it went to pay down the debt. It's gone. And $10 million, help me here, Council, $10 million, so we don't need to go through that today, but let's add to there that when we talk about that with that tax expert, what those options are related to those structures, let's make sure we start with a baseline understanding of the lease of revenues and where they have been allocated, spent, gone, and where existing, to the extent existing prepayment exists, what is it, where is it, and what might be available for a scenario that you just structured.
And the funding from the other buildings too, so maybe we can really lay out what could we reallocate to these.
Exactly, so where are all, as in the LAFCO application, also for those of you who are interested in sort of reviewing that historical information, is the all the sources of district revenue current. I'm not sure how good a job was done on historical, but that's all in
right,
the,
it's there.
The payment of the lease, where it went, how much is remaining, and then the current sources of revenue, just listing them so that we can capture them for our future session, what the current sources are and maybe what they are projected to be. Because we own some facilities and we do have income, revenue generated from existing facilities. That were paid for by some of that remaining or that prepayment of the lease. So those were assets that were added as a result of having those funds and revenues. So I think painting that picture, I think it'd be great because that will help us all start from the same place of understanding of what the revenues are and what's available, what the current stream of revenue is, how much might that be, and then that gives us sort of a baseline understanding of existing, current, and future. Is that what you're after?
Yeah.
I like that idea.
Okay, thank you.
Herb,
did you want to add anything? Okay, thank you for
That's what I was going to ask.
So. Oh, good. Thank you.
All right. Great. Dr. Zandl.
So getting off of funding, if we can, I think another area we're going to have to look at is representation. How we divide up the expanded district to make sure that the new communities are represented probably in a district form or sub-district, whatever we want to call it, so that we make sure that we're not electing people at large for the whole Coachella Valley. So I think we'll have to look at that.
That deadline is actually in the bill. So once expansion happens, you immediately appoint two people from the East Valley, and then the next scheduled election after January 1, 2020, you will have had to have already divided into seven districts. It's your process, it's not a LAFCO process, and then elections happen.
It doesn't have to be seven districts, does it?
Yes, yeah. It's very definitive. Yes.
Are you thinking though, Dr. Zendo, that I've taken a look at what that might look like earlier rather than later, or are you just process?
Well, I mean, I think there are probably steps that can happen, but on the other hand, I think people who are going to vote on whether they want to have the district expanded would like to know how they're going to be represented, and having two votes out of seven for half the population doesn't seem representative.
That would only be till 2020, but you're right.
Right.
I mean, let's make sure we're
How we're going to do it. And
right.
Again, we don't necessarily have to make all those decisions now, but I'm just putting it on the list of 6 months, 18 months, 3 years kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. And perhaps your own process for how the initial two representatives will be chosen, what that process will be, is something you'll want to talk about as well.
That's what I was asking, though, actually, was do you want to talk about that as a part of this, that how that would look after, I mean, after there is a
well, I think the bill's
seven divisions?
Oh.
No?
Well, what do you mean?
Well, there's going to be, if the district is expanded, we go to seven,
yeah,
and then in 2020, seven divisions are created.
Right, I think we should be looking at that over the long term,
about
where those divisions might be.
Yeah, I was just trying to clarify whether you want to look at it now or later.
Well, both.
Okay.
Right, you would likely need to do it by 2019 so that it's a year out for people that would be considering the potential. You can do it earlier.
We can do it now.
Hmm?
We can do it now.
You could.
We can project it. That's what I was trying to clarify, what you were after.
Correct. Anytime, I just was trying to market the 2019, so you're talking about a three-year horizon. You should be thinking about it now.
Good. Other comments from the directors on representation before we move to other topics? Okay, good. Go ahead. President Rogers, you want to make a comment? Additional ideas? Strategic questions?
I think that we need to do an in-depth needs assessment for what the community needs. And we did a little bit in the phone survey, but and we have hard data, but I think that we can drill down and do a better job in terms of what is really critically needed in the area, especially in preventative programs.
Great, so really, paraphrase, I mean, you want to learn and know as much about the East Valley as you know about the West Valley. And I think particularly whatever program content areas we end up with in the strategic plan, those are, you want an overall view, but you really also want to drill down on those content issues so that you're prepared to begin thinking about programming and services.
I think one of our key strategic questions is, do we want to ramp up? I mean, how would we like to approach this? I think it's a critical question. Do we want to start and figure it out? I mean, mentioned, or do we want to phase and develop some sort of a phasing with some sort of targets? Do we want to, you know, have an interim period during which, you know, certain things happen and inform the next phase? Or do we want to have, because all of that will impact what kind of funding strategy we want to create. It's really sort of like business planning. I mean, what do you want to do? How do you want to do it? And then that will dictate how much and how you need to develop the revenue.
Perfect. And I think this is exactly what we're hoping to hear from you all. Director Matthews, what would you like to add to the conversation about the East Valley expansion and the strategic issues ahead?
Well, I think most of them have been covered on, and I'm comfortable with the legislation addresses the districting and how that works. And so I don't think we just kind of asked the county to make the districts, and I guess we have a role in it, but they're divided by population.
We create the
creation of the seven.
We can lead the creation too, but you can't gerrymander them, and you know, there's courts.
You can't.
No, it's not done in a vacuum, and I would think we
would
provide some technical assistance for the board in doing that, but the ultimate, it's not. There was some conversation a couple months ago about it being a LAFCO process. It's not. It's your final decision. Obviously, inputs will go in, and we'll get the right experts to assist.
So, first, the legislation has to pass. It's 2018, and the first real election after the appointments is in 2020.
Yeah, the way the law reads is it says after January 1, the election after January 1, 2020.
Right, okay. So that, I think that kind of resolves itself along the way, is basically my point. On the expansion, I think we've kind of covered the issues, but before we leave it, we have a hospital next door here that won't be able to operate 140 beds after 10 years from now. And someone ought to start thinking about that. Any changes to the hospital? What does it take to get through OSHPOD today?
5 years.
5 years? Seven or five?
Yes.
Yeah, a lot. And then the expansion area itself. There's some sizable, and today's probably is not a bad day as others, but there's no parking here. And it's, you know, there's a lot that has to happen here. And then the real key is you kind of got to wait to 2018 to see if the expansion goes forward, because what's the impact of if you create facilities elsewhere in the valley? What kind of pressure does it take off of this campus? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some portion, I don't think it goes away, but it, does it drop by 10%? Does it drop by 30%? And a lot depends on what you do there. But that time frame for healthcare construction is pretty long.
So maybe one of the strategic questions out of that is that we want to know sooner rather than later what the whether we're going to be able to know how we're moving forward with our hospital, with or without a lease extension, with or without a master plan, with or without a, you know, an opportunity. So maybe that's one of the key strategic questions.
Yeah, that was good. I was just going to follow up what Mark and Ake is saying, is that I think if the expansion stuff is sort of wrapped, you could certainly can go into this discussion, because there are a number of questions that are, you know, front and center. So you've already heard a couple.
Yeah. So let's just hold the hospital piece for a couple of minutes and make sure we have all the issues around the district expansion. Then we'll definitely come back to that.
Well, this is sort of it. And then don't forget, we have JFK, right?
Thank you.
And which is also owned by Tenet and is a probably underutilized facility, and serves, I mean, it's the only hospital east of Cook. So I would think that strategically, that should be something that we partner with and look at and decide what that relationship might be like, or change, or what.
And that kind of straddles both sides,
yeah,
of both issues, so that's great. Good. Any other issues related to the district expansion plans? Any other big questions that you want to get on the board so that we can think about how to incorporate them as strategies under this priority area? Director Wortham, anything else?
Do you have something in mind?
No, I don't. I just want to make sure we don't leave this issue, because it's such a big, important one, and a new direction for you ahead.
I'd like to hear from our participants.
Okay, would you like to do that now? That would be great. Herb, do you want to take public comment on that issue of other strategic questions related to district expansion?
Absolutely.
That's great. Thank you, President Rogers.
Anybody in our audience?
There's a hand.
Was that a Gino? Yes?
No.
No, it was just your glasses. Lisa.
Shaking my head.
So I guess my question would be directed to the board members. Has a conversation taken place where it's really been focused about what is the perceived loss? There was mention about services that are already taking place here in the Western region and would not want to see those deteriorate in any shape or form. But is there other perceived losses that would occur due to this expansion?
I think, Lisa, the only conversation around that was just a few minutes ago, where we started to talk about if there's an expansion with an expectation of services with no funding, and then either the real or perceived desire or demand then becomes, how do you spread existing revenue across an enormous, more than double, population and geography, that would be an impact. And so that, I think, is an underlying background driver, which is why we got to the point, I think I can speak, that's why the LAFCO application was structured in the way that it was, you know, that we need to identify funding in order to, whatever the level, incremental or full scale, a source of sustainable funding that can be secured.
Right, then we also talked briefly yesterday, but the board is looking at a 10-year horizon, and this is the first 3 years. And there are extraordinary environmental factors. If you look at even beyond today's debate on ACA, you look at what will be a budget debate over the next several months, and we certainly know and we'll be there, you know, with you in terms of programs that may lose support at a federal level, programs that may get cut at a state level to address some of what's happening at the federal level, not regardless of the county. So I think at a staff level, we anticipate one of the hopefully outcomes of a robust health district is that there may be, and I would say there's likely to be, increased demand for services. There will be, therefore, increased demand on the district to help fund some of these things. So what you were talking about, Dr. Zendel, in terms of some of the potential private fundraising and other things that we've talked about, not taking from our partners, but some of the things that we've talked about, all of that gets into it as well. When I met with you, the first thing we talked about, which I was thrilled with your leadership, is, you know, the Farm Bill. Many of us are old enough to remember ketchup as a vegetable in the Reagan administration. Well, the nutrition chapter is up for reauthorization, and that's a part of this whole federal budget. So I just wanted to add that, you know, sort of commentary around it, because it is going to obviously impact what in the next year, two, three, your own services, those you're serving, the people that we hope that you're going to serve, and the potential need for us to raise more dollars to do that.
As we move forward and take a look at what our funding strategy is going to be for the expansion, should it be successful, you really need to take into consideration, and this is not a question, it's more of a comment, the difference in composition between East Valley and West Valley, not only in the demographics, but in the geographical composition. And if you're looking at parity on how the new expanded district can be part of the existing district model, you have to take into consideration that the composition over there is larger parcels, mm-hmm. predominantly agriculture, and who are already overburdened by over-regulations, over-taxes, costs of doing business and producing the food that we all live on. When you start to take a look at how you're going to assess a funding model on them, that's going to be a critical conversation, not only because it impacts the farming industry, but although we may have a greater need as far as population, and certainly the numbers reflect that, that's going to be interesting on how you meld the need and what you're able to move forward in funding in comparison to what your current model is. And I don't know anything other than East Valley, that's where I've always been, but from observation, I've seen that the West Valley has a very giving heart. They open up their hearts, their hands, they're willing to work for the East Valley, they open up their purse strings. So I don't think that there'll be much of an issue between East and West when it comes to the need and providing for the need, but you're really gonna have to take into consideration that it's gonna be difficult to find parity. It's gonna be difficult. So I just wanted to make that comment that, you know, we may find a funding model that from this side of the fence looking that way, you think, oh, that'll work. But when you're on that side of the fence and the need is greater and then the whole model is different, I'm not sure that you'll feel the same way. So you've got to look from the other side.
You're absolutely right. But we also need to be mindful that the constituents, the current constituents are a part of this. And so we need to factor in, their feelings and their opinions and their, so that finding the, I don't remember what term you used, but finding that, I said earlier, that some sort of a balance, it may not be parity, it may not be for some or others, but finding some sort of collective approach that is portable across the valley, I think, that would be that's my goal.
Jack, did you have a comment you wanted to continue to make?
My comment was not- more in the general public.
Okay. Anyone else in the audience, or Dr. Sendel?
Again, let me restate something that was stated before, and that's that so many of our organizations represented here today serve people on both sides of Cook. And currently they're having to expend a lot of energy doing the zip code thing, and now they'll be able to get rid of that extra administrative layer and serve people more seamlessly. And I think that that it isn't going to double the cost, because so many of these people are being served by organizations now who have to sort of do this extra segregation. So we're lucky that there are so many organizations that they're not just on the east or just on the west, but they're serving people on both sides.
You have another.
This goes to the conversation about the seven seats with the expansion of the district and that. And because of the time frame from 2018 to 2020, I would like to strongly encourage the board to consider putting into their strategic plan basically a band-aid to get us to the 2020, where they actually create a committee of East Valley either residents or key stakeholders to help guide them on their decisions while it goes through the process, and also to have the program committee to reflect the expansion to ensure that they can, you know, quite openly and honestly feel confident in the decisions they're making is truly being driven by representation. Because for those of you that were on the board, we did do a white paper on food insecurity. And as it's been stated, it is very different on what the solutions would be from east to west, and quite frankly, in central. And so I think to have that representation would be very imperative for that two-year time frame.
Anyone else? Okay, you can turn to the hospital.
Okay. Great, so we'll spend the balance of the time that we have focused on the strategic issues around the hospital and the health facilities. Director Matthews, would you like to just restate the issues that you started with a few minutes ago, and we'll make sure that everybody stays focused now on this new topic, and very important.
We have a lease expiring in 10 years, in 2027, that we can either extend or not. And there may be an effort to try and do it, and then it doesn't reach conclusion. So it's open. Tenant has indicated an interest to do so. I think we've indicated an interest in at least chatting, but that may or may not work out. But set that issue aside on who would operate the hospital at the end of the lease. Today there are very real seismic issues in the hospital, and primarily the east tower. So the two round towers, pretty safe, a little bit of minor work and whatever, but the square east tower in an earthquake isn't acceptable since the Northridge earthquake. And that date is moved out. And it's a problem that today, to get something through OSHPD, 5 years I think is optimistic, I'm hearing seven. That's just through the state, the approval of a hospital remodel or planning. And maybe it is in a remodel, and it's not my area of expertise, but it's something, you know, clearly we probably ought to do in the next 10 years is get it seismically compliant. And then anything related to that. Now, I do think we have the luxury of time on this front. Even if we agreed on it and said, let's move forward with this facilities plan here, by the time it comes out of OSHPD, we're going to know the outcome of the 2018 election and the 2020 election. So it actually, in a strange way, works. But that's something that we're going to be 100 and some bed shorter.
So part of that, it sounds like, is laying out a timeline that encompasses actually both of these big issues, because there's so many decisions that are separate, but they're interlocking in terms of financing. Great. other hospital issues and health facility issues that the directors would like to make sure get on the thinking board for the strategic plan?
Well, I would like to see a plan, a path, a deadline, a date, some motion moving forward with a master plan, a facilities plan. Do we not extend the lease? We put it on the ballot because that has to be approved by the voters for a lease extension. We did not have to do that when we first signed the lease, but there's new legislation that requires districts to have an election of the community. In this case, it would be of the current district borders on whether to expand the lease or not. And I would like to have Tenet and our board, or a committee of the board, to negotiate that and have that in front of the voters as soon as possible.
Okay, big issue.
I think those two issues are tied together because personally, I can't imagine the current leaser, or leasee, whatever. I can't imagine Tenet putting more money into this hospital to bring it up to seismic standards for 2030 now, unless they were sure they were going to be occupying the hospital after 2027.
Yeah.
So I think those are tied. Let me add another thing, only because it was brought up yesterday, and I think we're all aware of it, that we do need to demonstrate to the community that the district board is paying attention to the quality issues at Desert Regional Medical Center. That's partly Desert Regional Medical Center's job to show that they're paying attention, but it's also, I think, the public expects the district to pay attention to that and to protect the interests of the members of the district.
And just to underscore your point, Dr. Zendel, that's why on the list of possible program areas, quality, safety, and accountability has been underscored quite a bit yesterday in the discussion. And again, not just focused on the hospital, focused community-wide, but definitely the hospital was called out in that discussion and looking at how you want to monitor progress on improving quality scores and any safety issues. So thanks for adding that. Director Wortham, what would you like to add in terms of the hospital and facilities discussion, in terms of strategic issues that need to be addressed over the next, particularly next 3 years, which all of these certainly feed into?
I think really looking at how some of the funding from our current operator might be able to help support some of our initiatives is important. Certainly or clearly, the hospital serves people in the East Valley, in the West Valley, it pulls from a large geographic range, and given that that is the major asset for the district, I think we need to work with them to align our objectives and make sure that the funding is going in the right place. I know they've established a foundation, and I would like to see funds being distributed, you know, in concert with the overall strategic plan for the district.
Good, thank you. Good points.
Council, I agree. The answer to that is yes. The answer is once the district was annexed and you got that, whatever's in the district coffers is in the entire district's coffers.
But that doesn't mean that there's not an opportunity in the interim to secure additional
correct
support.
Correct.
She added, underlined.
That is absolutely correct. Underlined, underscored, exclamation point.
Resources is a big issue. Other issues. Dr. Zendel, did you have additional ideas?
No, again, I was just thinking, though, as we were talking about this and listening to what Herb said before, that one of the reasons the hospitals in the Coachella Valley have done is better than they did before in the last 3 years is because of ACA. That could change. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to keep that in mind as we think about spending money that they might not have.
Yeah.
So we need to remember that.
Yeah, very important.
Timing is critical.
And I want to underscore one other thing, because it's not getting talked about a lot right now because of the American Health Care Act. Much of the ACA is built in regulation. It's not in the statute. And there's a lot of people today that think that if we get over this hump, apparently Paul Ryan just told the president that he doesn't have the votes yet. And I'll give you one quick example of the board on indulgence, because I think for our partners it's important for all of us. When we did ACA implementation, the bill did not include all of the women's health related preventive measures, especially on the reproductive side, because of moderate to conservative Democrats that were needed to vote for the bill. And so it required the secretary to order a study from the Institute of Medicine on what additional women's preventive health measures she should potentially adopt in regulation. And so Secretary Sebelius received it. Linda Rosenstock, the head of the UCLA School of Public Health, was the chair of the committee. And they came out with, I don't remember whether it was 8 or 10 when we were doing it, but there were significant additional preventive health screenings at no cost to women put in the regulation. So in a nanosecond, you can look at the ACA, you can look at it and say, well, we don't exactly think this particular service is an A or B on the Preventive Services Task Force list, therefore not covered. 47 million women are in that category who have insurance that are eligible for that. So in a stroke of the pen, you can do that. So from the district perspective and the staff, we're looking not just at what the bill, but we're looking at what are the regulatory points that could potentially be a problem much sooner, even if that bill doesn't go forward today.
Right, and then I think, Herb, just to add to that, once the feds do whatever they're going to do, both in law and in regulation, then the state legislature and the governor will have to weigh in terms of where will California add additional or not general fund money to keep whatever parts of the ACA may have ended in California. And that conversation's already starting in a very broad and general way, but we'll get very specific once we know what changes are ahead of us.
I have a couple other things to add to the
good
facilities list, I think.
Right.
One is a facility conditions assessment. I think we've got a lot of individual comments and sort of some limited knowledge of conditions here and there. I think in order to move forward, we really need a full-scale facility conditions assessment to be able to know factually where are we, and you know what are the opportunities for recondition, enhance, replace, and not just from one source. So, I mean, I just think it would inform our decision making going forward. So I'd like to put that on the list. And then additionally, some scenarios I think would be great for us to start building. And I know Dr. Wortham has raised this as well, and I'd like to add my voice to it, to add it to the list that I think we need to start. We have enough information now, I think, especially with that facility condition assessment, then we'll really be ready to start talking about some scenarios, and then we can add in some of the risk issues that we've heard from the public today. What if, and if this happens, then what's the impact here on our facilities? And if that happens, I mean, if the ACA, I mean, if there are fundamental changes, you know, how do you scale an emergency department no matter where you're located, and you know, how much more do you need and when? And then we all, I think we know that our critical care bed situation is needs to be addressed, along with a few other things. So I think I don't know what the timing is, but I think it needs to be on the list. We need to start developing those scenarios.
Good, great addition. I think one of the things staff will want to do in terms of that timeline is incorporate all these different pieces and think through the logical sequence and then get your input on that, if that makes sense,
sure.
Given all these decisions and all these variables that are ahead.
I've heard the facilities master plan being thrown out, and I'm wondering, shouldn't that encompass all that, plus
yes.
The need for beds, the need for ER beds, the need for ICU beds. Do we need to replace the tower that has seismic problems that we will have to address? And do we tear it down and build a new one? And if we build a new one, we're going to use a parking lot that we have no parking. There's a ton of questions that need to be addressed in a facilities master plan, and as again, that needs to be done sooner rather than later.
A lot of issues on this topic. Any other thoughts, Director Matthews? Anything else on the hospitals, health facilities? Dr. Werther? Dr. Zindo? Okay. All right, so Herb and President Rogers, do we want to see if the public has any comments on this issue in particular before we start to look at next steps and then the general public comment?
Anything specifically on the health facilities issues? Councilman.
Thank you. So I understand the need to assess our condition of the facilities, but if you're inviting those of us from the other side of Cook Street, what does that then translate to? Does that mean that I, as a contributor, start contributing to the facilities needs here in Palm Springs? Or does that mean that somehow there's a facility in my district area that whatever you determine to be, that I will see some benefit from? I need to understand how I'm going to share that with my constituents.
You can answer that.
I'm happy to try to answer it, because I think the under the current situation, because we have to plan for both. We have to plan for if there is an expansion or if there isn't an expansion. So this conversation has been going on for a couple of years. So it's a continued conversation around the largest asset that the district has, the public asset, is Desert Regional Medical Center. And the master plan around that facility is paid for, as you just heard a little earlier, by a prepaid lease. So that wasn't paid for by the early years of the hospital were paid for by bond measures that the public passed to be able to build the first hospital. And then over time, you know, that asset became what is now Desert Regional Medical Center, and then that asset became leased to tenants. So future conversations around that are going to be part of any lease extension conversation with the operator in an attempt to try to cover those expenses, build, replace, whatever. But we don't know the answer because we don't know what we got to define those needs, which is why that assessment is so, and those scenarios are so critically needed. Then if and when the district is expanded, seems to me, our discussions have been around what are the needs, then we can start planning valley-wide for need, driven by need. So where do the future beds need to go? And then that is a conversation that is had with the constituents broadly, once we are able to identify what those drivers are. So we may find that we need to distribute beds differently. Maybe we need additional facilities, maybe we need enhanced facilities, maybe we need partners, maybe we need. And then those conversations, that's why those scenarios are so important, because depending on what the answers to those things are, we may find ourselves looking for additional partners in addition to tenant, or we may be expanding our existing partnership with our existing partners, things like that. So does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'll underscore something that, that President Rogers also said. I mean, the board overall is strategic planning for the entire Coachella Valley. So the needs assessments that have been done by HARC, some additional work that the staff and consultants have done, are clearly looking at needs, services, facilities, what the market looks like. So it won't be a matter of, you know, sort of flipping a switch and going through all of this plan, you know, and then saying, okay, we've got to do all of this planning now. The data is being done now so that they can look out and say, all right, from a transitionary period, if we haven't, we already know there needs to be these services, these types of facilities, these types of things. So it's not like there's a, okay, let's wait until 2018 to figure that out. We're strategic planning for the entire Coachella Valley.
Thank you.
Any other questions on this? Or?
Moving on.
Okay, I just wanted to take the next few minutes, first of all, to thank the directors for spending so much time over the last 2 days giving their thoughts and input into the potential areas for the strategic plan. I would really like to compliment you on the involvement of the public, both yesterday and today. I having been to many meetings in many public settings for many districts and other health organizations, it's rare to have almost every seat filled 2 days in a row, and I think that shows a great engagement of the community. So here are the next steps as we see them moving forward. If we look at the time between approximately April 1 and April 15th, we're going to have two community forums where the feedback from this meetings yesterday and today will be presented April 11th in the East Valley, and a date to be determined in the next few days in the West Valley. So these will be meetings that will be heavily publicized, intended for community residents, community organizations, elected officials to come and give input into the ideas that have been generated here at the strategic planning session. And then either on April 25th or at another special session of the district board, district and foundation board, we will present a draft strategic plan with a set of draft priorities, strategies, and outcomes that have emerged from all the data work, the discussions yesterday and today, the feedback from the community. And that will be a document that will be sent out in advance to the directors, and we'll expect the directors to take apart and put back together. So it's not intended that we'll hand out a document that they'll say, this is great, that we'll hand out a document that they will give feedback on, suggest changes and additions. Then we will take those comments and suggestions away. We'll revise the strategic plan and add to it a major strategy time implementation timeline and budget implications for the district budget. And that we expect will come back to the May 23rd regular board meeting for review and approval if it meets the discretion of the board. If it doesn't, we'll make more changes and it will come back at the June meeting.
I think, and then one other point for our community partners that are in the audience, this is, it's implicit, not explicit, but this includes continued work on the staff level across the entire valley, working with you, talking about the vision, talking about the things that are coming out, getting feedback. So there won't just be two, you know, forums and sort of that's it, but it includes a couple more months of really getting out and talking with as many folks as we can and partners. So that's a part of that process. And then when it comes to the budget timeline, I would be remiss, Chris and Mark, the chair, we will be in the Finance Administration Committee. Work has begun at the staff level to begin the budgeting process. So the strategic plan will process, will sort of sit side by side, so that the board will be not only adopting a strategic plan, but then an actual implementation plan, you know, for the staff, as well as a budget plan for the year that incorporates, obviously, not only the vision, but the priorities and the activities, et cetera.
And then I would just add, in addition to that, we would encourage the board to set up a monitoring plan once you've approved of the strategic plan, to have regular updates from the staff on how progress towards the anticipated results is going. And in that way, the ability to revise and modify as the environment changes. And one other thing that was brought up yesterday that I want to make sure is noted in the notes, and that we will address the next time we meet for strategic planning, and that is an assessment of the external environment that was brought up yesterday. And we felt initially that we would let things settle in Washington before we address that. Whether they'll be settled or not, we'll address that at the next time that we meet together. And an assessment both of local, state, and federal environmental issues that could impact the work that'll be recounted in the strategic plan. So any other feedback from the directors in terms of next steps? Anything else you'd like to see that you might not have mentioned or thought of?
As soon as possible.
You got it. Okay, well, thank you again for making so much time in your own busy schedules to give us all the feedback you did, and we'll look forward to your thoughts on the draft when we have it.
Okay, so why don't I put the mic back here and see if there are members of the public that want to come up and comment. We're doing 3 to 5 minute comments, please.
On anything they want.
On anything you want, including the weather.
Hi, I'm LaVon Hill, community member, representing informally Southern Highland Gateway. And under the focus areas, you had 4 sections. Under quality, safety, and accountability, I just want to know if transparency is implicit.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, my name is Jack Newby. I'm the Director of Development with Mizell Senior Center. I was here yesterday and wanted to comment on a couple of the things I heard with respect to the statistics and some other issues primarily related to aging. But I think the thing that struck me most with the statistics I saw in the work that I'm doing at Mizell Senior Center is that the aging of baby boomers has been described as a tsunami that is really going to swamp or test our medical service providers and service and medical services. And at the risk of mixing metaphors, this area here is the epicenter of that growth. Already, the senior population, and it depends on where you draw the line, whether it's 55, 60, 62, or 65, anywhere between 20% and 1/3 of the total population of the valley is at least 55 years old, if not older. In Palm Springs, for the older of the older adults, age 75 and above, we're more than 2 times the statewide average, and the projected growth is more than 2 times the statewide average of that particular age group expanding. And what happens when you get to that age group is their risk of poverty and the likelihood that they're living at or below the federal poverty level increases because they've outlived their retirement savings. And they're living on Social Security benefits today that they may have retired 20 years ago. And so they're living on Social Security benefits of maybe $800 to $1,000 a month. So many of the people we serve are living in poverty. And there's the UCLA Elder Economic Security Index that really says in Riverside County, a senior living alone, dealing with rent, their medical expenses and other expenses of living really needs to make somewhere between 200 and 250% of poverty to get by. So the statistics with respect to older adults, not only in the western part of the Coachella Valley, but we're seeing that growth in the eastern Coachella Valley, in both, from what I read yesterday, both of those areas, it is going to be the fastest growing segment of the population. I wanted to address also an issue that came up yesterday with respect to including snowbirds in the assessment. And I think it's important that snowbirds and tourists are included in the assessments of the issues that we need to address in terms of healthcare needs. But also my conversation with HARC was it tended to skew, and particularly those of us that use HARC for making a case to a funder, it tended to skew the income levels. So I think if snowbirds are going to be included in any sort of survey, that we need to make it very clear who the snowbirds are and who the permanent residents are. Because it's more the permanent residents who are 85 years of age living at or below the federal poverty level. I wanted to talk about another issue that's coming up, and I too am a person that's been living with HIV/AIDS since you knew you could be living with HIV. So one of the committees that I'm working on is aging and HIV, and I think that's going to be a big issue, and it already is a growing issue here in the Coachella Valley. And not only the constellation of medical issues that can impact a person, an older person living with HIV, they're experiencing issues relating to aging in some cases 10 years earlier than would be expected. And also the transition and how people deal with, particularly with some of the restrictions on federal funding and other assistance, how people deal with paying for their medications once they transition from private medical care to Social Security. Private medical care, you can get help from the drug companies. If you're on Social Security or a federal funded program, you can't get help from the drug companies in paying co-pays that are $200, $250 per medication, and that's if you're insured. So it could put someone living, regardless of what you're making, if you're taking, you're paying $600 to $1,000 a month for co-pays, that can be a pretty big hit. And insurance companies can help you if you're on private insurance, they can't help you if you're on federal insurance. And the other thing that came up with respect to HIV, and I'll just give you briefly that, you know, I'm talking as a member of the public, but I was involved with HIV and HIV service organizations and director of the San Francisco HIV Health Services Planning Council for 4 years. And we also, back then, when I was there, talked a lot about prevention. There was talk about condoms. You know, if condoms are the answer for HIV prevention, we wouldn't be here worrying about it today. So I really think that looking for those issues in terms of prevention, we need to look far upstream. And in my experience, issues related to mental health issues, substance use issues, and other issues are the primary drivers of HIV infection. And a lot here in the Coachella Valley is one of the primary drivers of methamphetamine use. So I probably hit my time limit. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Leslie Young, and I'm the Dean of Health Sciences and Education at College of the Desert. And I oversee programs at College of the Desert in healthcare, the nursing, three nursing programs, early childhood, the McCarthy Family Child Care Center, kinesiology, and athletics. And this board has supported us quite significantly in the past, and I'm really here to tell you how grateful we are for your support, and to tell you two little things that we're doing now that I just want to let you know about. One is that we've, one of our faculty, Dr. Courtney Dowsett, has spearheaded a program called Exercise in Medicine, where it's interdisciplinary between nursing, health sciences, nutrition, our student health center, where she's working with student interns in those programs. And we now have three focuses where she's got our interns in our local senior living facilities working on fall prevention. And we also, she's got a program called ABC, which is activity breaks for children, and working in our local elementary schools. And our last one is disability sports, where we're partnering with Desert Arc and Disability Ability Center and several other community partners, where we're focusing on veteran disabilities and sports. So we appreciate your support, and we look forward to continued support. The last thing I want to mention is your support for our McCarthy Family Child Care Center. And our director is here, Diane Russom. And our focus in our child care center is outdoor activities and learning, and also nutrition and eating whole foods. And so we have a kitchen garden, and we have community gardens, and our children learn about what zucchini is and how it grows. And my little story that I want to show you some impact that I think we're having, is that a child who had been in our center for several years and was ready for kindergarten left the center, and his mother brought him back to visit Miss Didi, and Miss Didi said, how do you like kindergarten? And he said, well, it's okay, but they don't have a salad bar. One thing I'd also like to mention is that you have supported us in an endowment for our director position, and our director of nursing is here, and her name is Carol Schilling.
Wow.
So thank you very much, and we applaud the work you do. Thanks.
Thank you.
I'm proud to represent some of the community partners here today. My name is Nicole Weaver-Goller, and I'm the Executive Director of Development for the UCR School of Medicine. And I'm very pleased to report that our brand new School of Medicine, the first public school in 40 years, with a very long history of a 40-year program of collaboration with UCLA, just is getting ready to graduate its first class of doctors. Of the doctors that we are sending forth, the match was 100% successful, which is somewhat rare within medical schools. And I'm extremely pleased to report that 83% are staying in California. Yay. That is the highest amount of any other UC. And 25% are staying directly within the Inland Empire for the residency. Of those going outside the area, we know several coming back because of the support that was raised for mission scholarships for them. They're looking forward to coming back and practicing. So we can't wait to continue reporting on the doctors that are coming directly into the pipeline. And thank you for your support in making that possible. Thank you very much.
Anybody else?
Staff have any comments?
Other than I was going to ask you if you had any questions for the staff.
Well, I think we have a brilliant staff, and I applaud all the work they do. I think they're mainly unsung heroes, but I love the way that the children recognize Alejandro and can tell him what the best their favorite vegetables are. So, I also wanted to thank everybody who attended. If we don't have any more discussion, I'll adjourn the meeting.
Sounds great, other than to thank the whole staff team as well. Thank you for those comments. It's been an all hands on deck approach.
And thank Bobby and Raphael and the other presenters too for the work they did.
Oh, definitely.
All right, I think we're done. Can we grab Director Hazen and Wortham for 3 seconds?
Sure.
Come to the principal's office.
Oh, how are you?
I thought it was really interesting.
Good to see you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank
stopping cooking at our location, but I've got a meeting with my folks this afternoon, so what do? With Roy's closing down with this, what do we do with taking the real, the less valid, and then the council thinking?